Welcome back, everyone, to the Dark Forest. Make sure to download your favorite scary story and follow me on the go wherever you may lie. Tales from the Dark Forest on my Apple Podcast and Spotify. Now, it's time to get spooky. Whatever your thoughts on California as a state, there is no denying that it is the home to some of the most awe-inspiring landmarks, not just in the US, but in the world. The Sequoia National Park in particular, which is 631 square miles of beauty, is home to one of the world's oldest and largest living organisms in the world, the behemoth General Sherman Redwood Tree. It's mind-boggling to think that this ancient being was alive for thousands of years. It was alive during the American Revolution, during the Spanish Inquisition, it was alive during the reign of King Tut, as many of its sister redwoods were that constitute the forest lands. This lost world has seen its share of rivers moving and species evolving, and unfortunately, going extinct as well. The last known California grizzly bear sighting was in 1924, after they were thought to have been hunted to extinction by prospectors who poured into California mountains during the gold rush. Who knows? There could still be one out there somewhere. These types of sightings happen quite frequently. The Yangtze River dolphin, though to be extinct, had also recently reappeared. Beyond the California grizzly bear and the cyclopean redwoods, I believe there is something else in those mountains. The radical California wildfires have been plaguing the state for nearly two decades, and have had a monumental, possibly irreversible toll on the various parks' ecosystems. While most fires are natural and sometimes necessary, they have been getting more pervasive and out of control. Climate change is a big factor in their cause as rising temperatures began the dry out kindling. However, there is another cause which is much less talked about. Over the years, people have been pushing more and more into the California wilds, not only creating infrastructure which gives fuel to fires, but carelessly causing them as well. Just some of the causes of the California wildfires range from vehicle sparks, faulty power lines, and a gender reveal. As a result, animal populations have begun to flee their homes and push back into towns and cities, occasionally resulting in attacks. The craziest stories of animal attacks weren't coming from those that wandered in the town, though. Soon after, there was circulations of attacks from strange unidentified creatures that were monstrous in nature. They were described as being nearly the size of a horse and bird-like. They sounded so outlandish. These people have to have been attacked by a mountain lions or bears or something. The natives of the area, however, actually had stories of these creatures dating back hundreds of years, so possibly not too far-fetched. Either way, something that was once living deep in the woods was now beginning to emerge, it seems. Then I came across something that cemented my intrigue. Not too long ago, my grandfather had passed away. I'd like to believe he went peacefully, but the poor old man had a few health issues caused by the Central Valley's poor air quality. While rummaging through his old belongings, I came across what my father told me was the old journal of my great-great-grandfather, which my grandfather had kept in an old cedar chest. Apparently, my great-great-grandfather was quite the renowned tracker and surveyor during his time. I spent a whole afternoon reading that thing, emerging myself into a time which sprang into existence right after the era of the American Old West. One of the journal entries detailed an expedition up into the Sequoia National Forests. July 26 of 1908. The previous few nights had been filled with such peril as I had never felt in all my previous adventures. We have come up in the Sierra Nevadas, my colleagues and I, Mr. Jim Foxhart, for a very particular job, sanctioned to us by the state of California. The state is beginning more aggressive expansion into these foothills, which were once occupied by the Munachi. They claim this expansion had caused some commotion from their peculiar wildlife, sounding mostly as monsters in their various descriptions. We rendezvoused with a Dr. Edward McMillan, a biologist from the University of Davis, who had accompanied us to catalog and identify this potentially unknown species. Though I doubted that we would come across anything of the sort. On about the third night, setting up camp much deeper into the redwood forest, I was only an hour or so into my night watch when I began to hear loud screeches, the likes of which were unidentifiable to me. These screeches would come and go at no predictable pattern, but they seemed to be calling to each other and getting louder. Mr. Foxhart was also awakened by this sound, and we sat there together for a good 15 to 20 minutes attempting to identify what creature it could belong to. Having no such luck, we woke Dr. McMillan up, who also stated that these sounds were not of an animal in which he was familiar with. We were certain, however, that it was multiple animals, a pack of some sort, and that they were predatory. We grabbed our rifles and lanterns and headed towards the source of the nearest cries, but the cries had stopped. I heard some rustling just to our right, and upon raising my lantern, I was flabbergasted to see a large emu of some sort, but with a large horse head, sharp claws on both hands and feet, and a long feathery tail. Its eyes glistened in my light, and though I only caught a quick glimpse of it, I could see that it was a beast almost the size of a horse. The animal quickly darted off with great speed. The other two men were just as puzzled as I am, though Dr. McMillan had said what we had just seen looked very much like a species in the Dromaeosauridae family, a species of dinosaur. We tracked them down for about a mile, but the further we pushed away from camp, the more we began to hear loud screeches, to which Foxhart agreed sounded very much like warning cries. Evidently, we pushed into their territory deep into the forest. We lost track of the creatures and the calls subsided. We spent another couple of weeks in the forest, but after that night, made no further contact or found any relevant traces, and so decided that this pack must have moved deeper into the woods to avoid human conflict. I had never really been a big believer in cryptids like Bigfoot or the Loch Ness Monster. Sure, it was amusing watching those documentaries on the Discovery Channel or those videos on YouTube, but I always felt like there was other explanations for what people encountered. This connection, however, was just too tantalizing. There was no way it could be exactly as everyone described it. Where could it have been hiding all these years? Besides, it had been a while since I had just gotten away back to nature, not that I needed such an excuse. After an exhausting few months of work and school balance, my brain was on autopilot. Once the parks opened back up, I had decided to plan a solo outing for myself. I packed up some gear, my Kodak camera, rations, my lucky knife, and headed out west to the Sequoias. I drove up the winding roads past some devastation left by the fires of the summer. Businesses and homes were burnt down. Some were just being cleared. Some were being rebuilt. It was good to see that society would carry on, though I had no doubt in my mind that there were lives ruined. Would we ever learn our lesson? It was good to get out of the car after a few hour drive and stretch once I found a good campsite. I was lucky to find a place secluded, probably because this was an area which was associated with the alleged attacks. I actually did go on evening hikes with my Kodak and a field recorder. I'm not sure what I expected, really. I guess I let my imagination get the best of me. I only wanted to spend a good week. I didn't like wasting my vacation leave willy-nilly. Then, it became real. It was Thursday night when I was awoken from my sleep by a loud screeching sound. It invaded my dreams first, and then pulled me out, looking up at the moonlit tent walls. I laid there quietly for I don't know how long, trying to decipher that sound. The journal entry then came to mind. Was this what my great-great-grandfather heard? I was both excited and terrified. I had to investigate. I grabbed my Kodak, flashlight, and of course, my knife, and slowly crawled out of my tent. I found that I was not as good as my great-great-grandfather had been at determining directions, as the sound sounded like it was coming from all directions of the forest, echoing through the old pines and off the cliffs. It soon became apparent to me that, as my grandfather had also determined, there were multiple calls responding to each other. I don't know what oddly placed bravery came over me, but I had the sudden courage to search into the dark forest for them. I quietly scanned the area for them, at first only circling my campsite. Luckily, I had a good sense of direction, so I knew I wouldn't get lost. I then got a good bearing on where the sound was coming from, so I started strolling in that direction. I walked for a good 10 minutes when the screeches suddenly began to bark louder and more frequently. I heard it rustle just off in the distance to my left. I quickly aimed my powerful light and saw a black bear running off. It really wasn't the bears I was worried about, though, as I always had a small can of bear spray with me. But what was he running from? For whatever reason, maybe I was still a bit tired, I pressed on. Now, I'm not a tracker by any means. I wasn't even in Boy Scouts. But I could have sworn I saw odd bird-like tracks in the dirt, or at least I thought I did. The hair stood on my neck as more and more the events in the journal entry and the story suddenly becoming more plausible. It couldn't be, could it? This whole time, I guess I just thought I was going to find some loudly mating birds and then have a good chuckle and go back to bed. There was more commotion going on around me. I would frantically whip my light in the direction but would see nothing. Maybe about an hour or so into my night stroll, I came across some odd structure. It looked like some kind of weaving of sticks and trash. I cautiously approached it for a closer look. Oh my God. It was a nest. There were eggs in there. Odd-looking eggs. They looked the size of regular chicken eggs, actually. I stood there dumbfounded for a moment. Then it hit me. Something literally hit me. I went stumbling back as something slammed into my side with immense force. I quickly scrambled to my feet and frantically looked around. There were clicking noises now coming from all around me. Then I saw it. It jumped out of the foliage with tremendous height and began to crackle at me, bowing low. It was trying to intimidate me. Some sort of bird-like animal with a long tail diagonally pointed up, and a long snout and claws at the end of its feathered arms. I instantly drew the connection between these creatures and the creatures of the stories. I had just stumbled upon something that may have been extinct for millions of years, evolving in its own way, in near total isolation and uncategorized by humans. Funny enough, however, I did note one notable difference. These creatures were not actually horse size, more like the size of a large dog. Some things are just exaggerated, I guess. In either case, the one staring me down sent shivers coursing throughout my body. I was suddenly knocked down again, I pushed myself up with all my might. There was another one. The one in front of me was just a distraction. Now there were three, all flanking me. I knew there had to be more. I also knew they were just defending their nest. I wasn't any less terrified. The one to my right charged me. I got him with my bear spray just as he lunged. I got him square in the face as he began to flail. The others looked puzzled and squinted at each other. I quickly sprayed a line of spray and backed away slowly. I continued fast walking backwards with my light on the nest until it was out of sight. I would continuously hear them squawking from around me. These forest ninjas were monitoring my every move. I had my bear spray ready, as I figured that would be a more effective defense than my knife. It wasn't nearly as sharp as to what they were packing. Every once in a while, I would catch a glimpse of them, their eyes shining in my light, off in the distance, flanking me. If these animals really wanted to, they could have swarmed me. I think they were just being sure that I didn't pose any further threat to their nest. They weren't taking any chances, and neither should I. I began hiking towards my Jeep, bypassing my campsite, as it would be foolish of me to try to sleep there tonight. After some time, as I approached the roadside clearing where I parked my Jeep, the squawking and rustling had faded. I hauled myself into my Jeep, exhausted from the running and the terror. I locked the doors, reclined my seat, and laid there, contemplating what I had just experienced. Wondering if it was real or was it just a dream brought up by too many nights watching creepy videos. I didn't notice myself drift off to sleep. The next morning I got up late, around 11-ish, as you could imagine, after having the rough night I had. I made the short hike to my campsite and found it undisturbed. I packed up my tent and the rest of my belongings and gear, but took one last look around the site. I didn't see anything that would prove any indication of what had happened last night. I normally don't drink coffee, but I grabbed some at the nearest 7-Eleven as I figured I had a long drive home. I unpacked my stuff as usual, as if nothing different had happened this time. I don't know what I was expecting. Maybe it was a dream. Hell, I didn't even think to use my camera or my field recorder. Damn. As I was unpacking my backpack, however, I noticed something that was caught on the back strap. It was a feather. A large feather.